From the land to Grand University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 14th day of May, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. President Trump has wrapped up his visit to China, and the agricultural trade did not take it well. We'll discuss that today with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. He's out of Windsor, Illinois. We'll take a look at yesterday's happenings in Washington, D.C. While the president was away, the House of Representatives managed to pass year-round E15 in a permanent bill. And then we'll turn our attention as we wrap up our time together to the weather forecast. Mike Tenora will be here. He's at T-Storm Weather in Naperville, Illinois, and we'll do all of that on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day settled at $4.67.5. That was down 13.25. December new crop 11.75 lower at $4.91.25. July soybeans $11.92.5 finished 36.5 cents lower than November at $11.83.5, down 24.25 cents. Bean meal down $6 for the day. The bean oil 66 cents lower. Soft red winter wheat down 17.5 cents at $6.58 a bushel. That's in the harvest month July contract. July for the hard red at $7.05, down 19.5 cents. Live cattle futures were 32.5 cents lower at $2.46.15. Feeders at $3.58, down $2.92.5, and lean hogs at $104.55, $1.32.5 lower. Crude oil at $97 a barrel or thereabouts, around 20 cents lower, and the natural gas for the day at $3.09, up 2 cents. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us. He's in the tractor cab planting corn, I suspect, this afternoon. Hi, Matt. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. We're actually have a little bit of a window here, so we're hoping that we can get stuff done and then we don't get a huge rain event. That's what we're hoping for anyway.
Well, you had a huge event actually at the CME Group in Chicago. Corn, wheat, soybeans all down hard today. This on news, I suppose, in part out of China, that the trade negotiations there didn't result in any new news. They didn't actually change old news either. Why did the market decide to move lower?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, a lot of folks were hopeful that they would find a way to negotiate something better than the 25 million metric ton per year that they already negotiated. And then, of course, this morning, Secretary Bessent said, actually, that deal's done. We don't have anything to talk about with regards to soybeans. And, you know, clearly the trade didn't like that news very much. Of course, there's been a lot of whispers here lately that, you know, China might be in shopping U.S. corn. And I still think that could be the case because we've looked at it and there's no doubt U.S. corn works into China right now with where their domestic prices are. But certainly having no sort of a trade deal wasn't something everyone wanted to hear. And of course, this is at a time whenever our markets, you know, probably needed to take a bit of a breather anyway, because we've been a little bit overbought here lately.
How concerned should producers be that we are in the middle of May and not ready yet to have dry conditions exactly in the Midwest that would cause a move up in this marketplace?
Well, I mean, ultimately, I'll tell you, Todd, you talk to 10 different growers and it seems like you come up with 10 different weather situations that guys are dealing with. Bottom line right now is that you've got people too wet. You've got people that are just getting in the field. You got people that are too dry. I talked to a lot of folks in Iowa trying to replant. I've talked to people in Iowa that have dry seed and dry dirt. It's just a variety of things is going on. So, you know, whenever I look at, for instance, today, this Chinese situation, no doubt in my mind that the corn market can actually function on its own. I think that corn taking a breather isn't the end of the world. I'm not saying we're going to rally precipitously by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't think we're going to fall completely out of bed just yet either, because there's a lot of question marks as to, hey, what's this going to look like, you know, if we cut acres, maybe a couple million acres. So I don't think that I expect this market to just fall out of bed right now anyway.
On the soybean side, the Trump administration really didn't talk a lot about soybeans going into this. The trade's certainly expecting something more than what had already been agreed to. Will there be a building issue within the trade, thinking that the Chinese may simply decide not to fulfill what's already been agreed to for the 25 million metric tons going into the fall?
You know, I don't know that there was anything signed, and that's been an issue that I've had all along, is that there just hasn't been a formal agreement, if you will. And I think that's what everyone's looking for. There's no question that without a formal agreement, you know, it puts us all in a position where we just don't know what to think. And so, you know, is there a chance that they would renege on that? I mean, certainly with the geopolitical climate that we're in right now, anything would be deemed possible. So, I do think that that's a concern. I do think there's a lot of traders that are a little bit nervous as to what's going to be around the corner here.
What are you hearing about wheat in the western United States and how it's made it through the last couple of weeks?
Well, it's a problem, a major problem. I mean, if you looked at that report this week, Todd, I mean, Texas, 70% abandonment. I mean, that's just an incredible number. Clearly, there's going to be abandonment in Kansas as well. The growers that we're talking to out there have told us that just to get some of their corn planted and up, they've had to use irrigation. It's just extremely dry. They've got a couple chances for showers, but in talking to my buddy Eric Snodgrass, you know, he doesn't know that it's going to be enough to flip the script here. So they've got a lot of issues to deal with. That wheat crop's not going to be worth a darn, and I'm not so sure USDA might need to adjust that a little bit lower yet.
From Brazil this morning, CONAB released its updated numbers for both the corn and the soybean figures. Production up in both. What'd you make of those figures?
Yeah, I mean, to me, when I look at what's going on there, the NDVI images still look pretty good. But I tell you what, there's parts around Mato Grosso and Rio Grande do Sul that are excessively dry right now. They just and they've entered into monsoon's over. You know, they've entered into the dry season. And so, you know, I'm not totally sure that you're going to be looking at as big a crop as what everyone's saying right now. So definitely a big crop, don't get me wrong, but I do think that that crop has a chance of moving lower from here.
Anything else about the marketplace we should be paying attention to today? I know you're busy in the field.
Well, I think one thing that we want to watch and see if there's a follow-through selling. I mean, no question about it that on the commitment of traders, as of Tuesday's close, there's a chance we're going to see a record corn long. And so are they going to shed a fair amount of that length before the end of the week? That won't be reflected in the commitment of traders. But, you know, sometimes the funds like moving in days of three. And so if we see additional selling tomorrow, it wouldn't completely shock me. But at the same time, I do think there's a lot that's going to happen between now and, for instance, the planted acreage report. So, you know, I wouldn't lose too much heart over what happens here over the next day or two.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it. Stay safe in the field.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. In today's agricultural news, a major priority for corn growers across the nation is one step closer to reality. The House has now passed legislation allowing year-round nationwide sales of E15 fuel, though it was a close vote at 218 to 203. The National Corn Growers Association's board member Jan Tenbenzel, a farmer from Nebraska, says finally clearing the House feels a bit different this time around.
I feel pretty good. It's a great relief to get through the House. This is going to be a win-win for everybody because ethanol checks all the boxes.
Tenbenzel says high fuel prices helped to drive that conversation. As gas prices rise, E15, of course, has a much lower price point in many cases. He also says ethanol supporters have spent years battling outdated claims about the fuel.
Tell the truth and give our message out. Our opposition has been throwing around and digging up old myths and 40-year-old information that's totally out of date and just very disappointing. It's disappointing, but it makes it easy to counter-argue.
NCGA has been working for more than a decade on year-round E15, but Tenbenzel says the job, of course, isn't done. The attention now turns to the Senate and, if passed, getting the bill to President Trump's desk. All of that should be a difficult task. Recall the House passed year-round E-15 narrowly, 218-203, with 90 Republicans and 113 Democrats voting no on the bill. The House Republicans that did vote yay came to the year-round E-15 debate still bruised by an ugly fight over breaks for small and mid-sized refineries that nearly tanked the recently passed House of Representatives version of the Farm Bill. E-15 was separated out from it, and now both are in the hands of the upper chamber. It's certainly not clear either bill will have an easy route forward in the Senate. For instance, Jim McGovern, a House Democrat from Massachusetts, was pretty clear about the chances for the E-15 bill there.
Once this gets separated from the Farm Bill, lots of luck. Lots of luck. And then what do you say to your farmers? And what do you say to the people who you promised that you would fix this? I mean, the bottom line is we all know what's going on here. And again, the Senate is not going to take up an independent E-15 bill.
An independent E-15 bill. And that's exactly the same conclusion renewable fuel CEO Jeff Cooper drew when asked at an earlier E-15 press event this week. Cooper said the answer would be to attach year-round E-15 to another bill, possibly to a supplemental on Iran war spending. Speaking of the Senate, it is preparing to take up the House bill. That's the Farm Bill. Senate lawmakers are beginning to work on the next phase of the 2026 Farm Bill after the House approved its version last week, setting up negotiations over commodity programs, conservation funding, and livestock regulations. Farm groups are closely watching Senate discussions involving crop insurance, reference prices, and livestock provisions tied to California's Proposition 12 animal housing law. Now, ethanol organizations are also again pushing lawmakers to include permanent nationwide access to E-15. House Ag Committee Chairman Glenn G.T. Thompson said lawmakers hope to move quickly on final negotiations, though difference remain between Republicans and Democrats over nutrition spending and climate-related conservation programs. Agricultural economists say the bill comes as farmers continue facing lower commodity prices and elevated input cost. Commodity groups warn delays in passing a final package could create uncertainty for producers making planting and marketing decisions this year. On that note, rising diesel fuel and fertilizer prices input costs are increasing financial pressure on U.S. farmers during the peak of the spring planting season. That, according to analysts and farm groups, energy costs have climbed in recent weeks amid global trade tensions and uncertainty surrounding tariffs and overseas shipping routes. Higher natural gas prices have also increased fertilizer production costs, especially for nitrogen products heavily used by corn growers. Agricultural economists say many row crop producers are already operating with thin profit margins after several months of lower corn and soybean prices. Diesel prices are affecting everything from field work to grain transportation, adding expenses across the supply chain all the way to the consumer's plate. The American Farm Bureau Federation says elevated input costs continue to limit profitability for many farmers despite improved planting conditions in the Midwest. And finally, we'll stay with fuel. Strong demand for renewable diesel is continuing to drive soybean processing growth across the United States, boosting demand for soy oil used in biofuel production. Industry analysts say expanding renewable fuel mandates and favorable processing margins have encouraged crushers to increase capacity as energy companies seek additional feedstocks for lower carbon diesel fuel. Several new soybean processing facilities are expected to begin operations this year in the Midwest. The increased crush demand has helped support soybean markets despite uncertainty about the export competition and global grain supplies. Agricultural economists again say domestic demand from biofuel producers is becoming a larger factor in soybean pricing. Biofuel groups and soybean organizations continue to support federal renewable fuel policies, arguing they create new markets for farmers and rural communities. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org, where you can click and play the programming content anytime you'd like, or if you prefer, you can just search it out in your favorite podcast applications by name. The Closing Market Report. Also at willag.org, you'll find updates from the crop scientist, the ag economist, and the animal scientist right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Well, as you know, agriculture is among the many issues President Trump has been discussing this week with China's Xi Jinping in Beijing. Tariffs, soybeans, Iran war impacts on fuel and fertilizer supplies and prices are all ripe for those summit talks. We'll know more about them as time passes. However, North Carolina GOP Senator Tom Tillis has been at the Brookings Institution, where he was speaking at a forum and talking about what his farmers are concerned about as it relates to China. Part of it's its intrusion in U.S. agriculture.
And in my state, it has a lot to do with investment in land and agriculture, and some of the news reports that have proven to be true, in other cases they weren't, about China's interest in farmland in and around our military facilities.
And the retiring Republican Senator Tillis says it's not just farmland.
They've bought up a lot of meat processing facilities.
China's Smithfield plant in North Carolina processes some 32,000 pigs daily. Now, Tillis, who sits on several committees dealing with trade and international security, says the results of a China trade war for ag were foreseeable.
They're going to ramp down soybean pipeline. They did, because they do it every time we get into these skirmishes. And agriculture tends to have a disproportionate immediate impact.
The outgoing senator says China has taken some of the edge off of that with its multi-year soybean buying spree, but other tariff spats remain, and the United States only pulled back after China imposed and then relaxed rare earth export controls, another possible discussion topic, of course, that could have taken place in Beijing. Let's turn our attention now to the growing regions across the planet and the weather and climate in each of them. We're joined by Mike Tenorum. He is the president and CEO at T-Storm Weather in Naperville, Illinois. That's at tstorm.net online. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us today. We really appreciate that. I'd like to take up some longer-term conditions. Starting in the United States, there is a long-term drought that has taken hold in many places. Can you tell me about the driest areas and what you believe to be happening in each of them?
Well, it's still pretty dry out in the plains, and our big concern for that region is that spring wheat in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Montana are all getting pretty dry. 100% of this crop was drier than normal over the last 14 days. And 91% over the last 30 days. We can look back in our records going back to 2012, and there's very few days that ever saw this kind of dryness. And that just tells us that we need rain. Now, there is rain ahead for this area starting up on Saturday and Sunday. A major cold front is going to sweep across the United States, and it will initially trigger showers and storms in that area. So we think the conditions are going to improve a little bit as we head over the next 5 days. But our concern for spring wheat is that planting is a little bit behind schedule, which is odd given how dry it is. That's probably due to the cool temperatures they've had over most of April and the first half of May. And when we add this rain to it, although soil moisture will improve, it might not be the best thing for planting that spring wheat crop.
From the spring wheat in those far northwestern areas, a move to the southeast and across the Corn Belt. Let me know what conditions are there and what you expect over the next week or so.
Well, it's dried out a lot over the last couple of weeks across the Corn Belt. About 85% of U.S. corn and soybean production were drier than normal over the last 2 weeks. So that just shows you that a pretty major planting window is currently open. As we move over the next few days, it's going to start to storm a little bit in the Corn Belt. A warm front is going to move through tomorrow and Saturday, and that will trigger some thunderstorms in varying areas of the Corn Belt. Now, we're not looking for heavy totals, but it might knock a few producers out as we move into the weekend. As we get into next week, that's where we're going to see quite a bit of rain. That front we talked about for the Northern Plains will move all the way across the Corn Belt over the first half of next week. And that should produce anywhere from 1 to 2 inches across a big chunk of the Corn Belt. So conditions will improve from a soil moisture standpoint next week, but that will tend to slow down planting a little bit. So kind of a mixed bag there too, Todd, where, you know, we kind of want the rain to improve soil moisture, but we don't want it so we can keep on racing forward with corn and soybean planting.
Let's stay with springtime in the Northern Hemisphere, but move to a different continent. What do you see across Europe?
Well, they're seeing some nice rains, and that's going to continue for a while. We have the main jet stream lined up right across Europe and then extending into Ukraine and Russia. And that's going to continue to bring some nice rains to the wheat crop out there. So while we've been dealing with winter wheat problems in the United States for a while, it's kind of the opposite out in that area where they've been seeing some rains over the course of the winter and the spring. And they're going to see some more ahead over the next week or two.
There have been some areas in Brazil where the second crop, or safrinha corn, is in the process of mid-season that have been problematic. Can you tell me about those areas and maybe some of the places that are really good, too?
Well, the problem area is in and near the states of Goiás, Minas Gerais, and Bahia. That's pretty much the northeastern growing region. And we would argue that basically, the dry season started 1 to 3 weeks early for about half of the Brazil second corn crop. So that's not ideal for them, but you need to keep in mind that they had some pretty fantastic rains leading into this period. So it's not like we were dry all season. We're dry here in the latter half of it. The rest of that crop, though, has been seeing some pretty good rains, and there's some more rain ahead. So the Brazil corn story is a little bit of a mixed bag, with essentially half of the crop drying out too early, but the other half's doing okay. And in the end, that's usually how you end up with a normal crop, not a great crop, not a terrible crop. We'll have to watch the yield reports and see how that pans out.
Hey, thank you much, Mike. We'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds great, Todd.
Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather from Naperville, Illinois, online at tstorm.net. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. Don't forget, we'll record our Commodity Week program this afternoon, posted to the website at willag.org, willag.org, by about 6 o'clock this evening. Our panelists will include Chip Nellinger, Brian Stark, and Greg Johnson. It'll also air in its entirety tomorrow during this hour on our home station and on many of these stations over the weekend as well. Thank you for listening to the Closing Market Report. Have a great afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.